There you are.
Think again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And on 3CR Digital and streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all. Welcome to Think Again, and this time seriously. We were a little bit dealing with some technical problems, but we're here now. Welcome to Think Again, a program produced by Borderlands Cooperative, an organization working for social change for more than 27 years. We're broadcasting from the 3CR studio on the not ceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I'm Jacques Boulet, as I said before. Jennifer has a day off today, so today I'm having a conversation with Darren Lane, manager of Hepburn Energy, and also long-term community-led climate transitions advocate. Earlier, much-loved presence and collaborator at Borderlands Cooperative, and a master's degree also she obtained for her participation in our OASIS graduate program. So finally, welcome to the program, Darren.
Thanks so much, Jacques. It is lovely to hear. I was just thinking, actually, when you were talking about the 27 years of Borderlands, that I think I probably first heard and connected and met you, I remember, at a Sustainable Living Festival in Fed Square. I think it'll be 20 years
it
next
certainly
year.
Must have been.
I think it was in 2006.
So. A whole generation, Darren.
So, that's right.
So in Think Again, we've had a number of conversations and interviews about several aspects of the environmental doldrums we're finding ourselves in, globally and locally. And I don't really need to list again all the rather dramatic details of our climate disasters in this country. Fires to floods to pollution to warming and plastic poisoned oceans and extinction. It's rather easy to get ever more negative and desperate because of the fact that those in power don't seem to care that much, apart from some pious repetitions about reaching our 2030 or 2050 plans, but other than that, in terms of real action. So it would be really easy to give up. But then I keep receiving reports about the projects you, Taryn, have been involved in for the last 10 years, or more even, and they are actually quite amazing. And last year came the book you have published, which has actually the very optimistic title, Hopeful Action, a handbook for community-led transitions. And it's the hopeful bit, really, which caught my attention. And made me even want more talk with you. So let's start off. Could you share with our listeners what got you engaged in this type of work and this type of activism?
Yeah, sure. Look, I think I've always been passionate about social justice and also environmental issues. When I think back to my teenage years, it's always been a sort of consistent thread. And really that was what interested me about Borderlands Co-op in the first place. So I have this sort of long history, particularly with co-ops, which I think, you know, co-ops themselves are a form of social justice activism.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, worked in international development context with cooperatives, as well as, you know, the most recently, the past 15 years, I've worked locally in my community with Hepburn Energy, which is a cooperative, mm-hmm. an energy cooperative. So, look, during that period, I've seen and communities can really play a key role in achieving climate change goals. And the community-led action, it creates hope. You know, it's sort of it's medicine for climate anxiety. And, you know, when I see the kinds of things that you know, our communities participated and achieved, I can see that they have a very, very sort of proactive way about them. And, you know, they have a real belief that 100% renewable and action on climate change, all of these things are achievable because, you know, they've been doing them with our support over the long term. And these types of things, it's not just sort of environmental action, you know, it really is those social value and benefits that I think are important, particularly when it can seem you know, really overwhelming in the face of climate disasters and events. You know, what can we actually do? And particularly for the youth as well, growing up, you know, in this moment in time with what's happening in the world. I think also something else that I learned early on from Borderlands, actually, I was just reflecting this morning. It's such a simple thing, but it's around this idea of the commons, and particularly around the Creative Commons, which is, you know, a pathway for intellectual property to be shared. So I learned about it early on from Borderlands, and I've made sure that anything I'm involved in, you know, since then is done under that. So all of the learnings that I've learned, all the things that we sort of model and pilot in our community, have always been freely accessible to other communities. And I see that as a type of that as well, of not being proprietary about what you know, not holding on to it. And I guess this handbook is a free resource that I've been wanting to create for a couple of years, and just to put that information out there.
Yeah, good. Just before you start on the handbook, let's have a look first how you got into Hepburn Energy and how you have become involved quite worldwide with renewable energy and particularly wind energy.
Yeah, I think, look, back 15 years ago, a position was created for me from a team of volunteers working locally in the Hepburnshire that were developing this project. And my role was the first community engagement role in a renewable energy project in Australia. Now we do kind of commercial developers and projects. Every single company will have a community engagement specialist. But back then, it was really a response of how do we get projects like this to work, and how do we do them in service of the community? And I was really lucky to have that role created. And obviously my role's changed over the years, but, you know, that was the original impetus. But for me, myself, you know, I very much think of myself as a community development practitioner. I'm not a scientist. I'm not an engineer. Although running a wind farm and, you know, doing climate change programs certainly teaches you a lot about those things, I really think that, you know, my strong grounding in community development, I guess in university, then in volunteering, and then working in international development context, it just socialised me through these practical, real examples of justice and how to, you know, be in community and work with community for all of their kind of struggles and aspirations. I think I also, I care deeply. I think that's an important factor. You know, it's really important for me to work for organisations that are values aligned. And so, yeah, look, I think I've just learned a lot over those years from my community, other communities, what we're doing in regards to climate action locally. As I said, I've been, you know, running Hepburn Energy now for 15 years. And during that time, we've been really modelling what a tiny organisation can do locally in service of supporting our community to be able to, you know, act in the face of climate change. You know, aside from the two wind turbines, we have delivered an additional $7 million in community value through community-based programs like bulk buys for solar and batteries, EVs, hot water systems, climate change adaptation projects, circular economy projects. And we've partially electrified almost 500 homes locally. So I have this very sort of lived experience of seeing that, you know, very tiny actions, small projects collectively can have a big impact and bring a lot of hope into community.
And I would so hope that a couple of government people are listening to that. So tell us now about the book, Hopeful Action and Community Led, in your title. So what's the spirit behind these two concepts, in addition to what you already have said? Because community obviously is there, reciprocity is there, hope. Where does the hope come in?
Yeah, look, I think as I've mentioned, you know, I really wanted to share really practical pathways that communities and individuals can take action and really try and demystify it for them. There's a lot of programs and projects happening all over Australia that are really guiding, but often it's not clear as to what are their methodologies, how are people doing things in their own homes, you know, what does it mean to take climate action, to do climate action collectively in a community, what are the steps to do so, what can you do in your workplace. So I really just wanted to share pathways and demystify it. In 2017, I completed a Churchill Fellowship and was able to travel to villages in Europe that had already transitioned to 100% renewable and were taking the next steps. And I saw, like in our community, this real, of pride and hope in what they were doing and, you know, the small incremental steps and how that, really created a lot of social value locally. I was lucky after that the Churchill Trust, you know, they were the ones that provided the funding for this free resource, you know, almost 8 years after the fact, which I was very grateful to be able to kind of put it back out to the community. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think it's about providing solutions for people. It's about making things digestible. It's about anyone, whether they're sort of, have been working or, you know, volunteering or taking action in climate change for decades through to sort of early adopters, or to be able to find something that's accessible and useful in there. If we're going to see, a transition that happens faster and more successfully, we really need all hands on deck. Mm-hmm. And, you know, communities can really play a key role in achieving climate change goals. But to do that, we need local leadership, we need to build capacity, and we need to take action to stop, fossil fuel usage.
Mm-hmm.
The community-led element is to just put a different take on the government-led or the local council-led or the business-led or, the market-led pathways through transition and to really, put forward this clip, community-led development more broadly, whether it's for, other things apart from the environment, is a really successful pathway to create meaningful change mm-hmm. in communities and, programs of benefit. And mm-hmm. that it prioritises participation and inclusion, it gives communities a voice, it creates community assets, there's mm-hmm. capacity development, mm-hmm. capacity, accountability in community, community leadership, adaptability, collaboration. And these are all really important mm-hmm. elements.
Yeah. You basically elaborated the infamous or famous bottom-up kind of theory. Fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's let listeners catch their breath a little bit, and we'll listen to Turayan. Let's Advise Each Other by Larry Maluma. Babo Basiga. Yeah. Ringinja, 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 ringinja. You're listening to Think Again on 3CR Radio, 855 AM on your dial and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. I'm having a conversation with Taryn Lane, manager of Hepburn Energy, especially about a book she has published last year. The book's called Hopeful Actions Through Community-Led Transitions, and that's all meant to deal and in intended to deal with climate change and what we locally can do things about it. So let's turn to more practical aspects of the community-led climate transitions you're writing about in the book. And you already have started that anyway before the break, but let's concentrate on the home, workplace and community transitions. Could you share a few of the main points you raise in each of those areas?
Yeah, absolutely. For home, I really focused on electrification and, you know, getting off gas for households. Mm-hmm. So renewable energy coupled with energy efficiency and electrification, it's the easiest route to reducing emissions. And when you think about collectively how many households there are, this is actually a very sizable piece of our emissions. The technologies are already here and affordable. And why it's important is that we have the opportunity. You know, now we'll only get this opportunity once. It's a once-in-a-generation opportunity for a wealth transfer to happen away from the big companies that are, you know, the big energy companies into people's households, long-term bill savings. And we also have the opportunity to speed up the transition if as many households are engaged as possible. You know, people are really struggling with how to take action in their home, who to trust for information, you know, which technologies to use and what order to do things in. So, you know, this handbook shares great evidence-based work from groups like Renew and Rewiring Australia that are really active in this space and can support people to make changes. For community, I really love finding out how communities are taking action. Each community out there has their own little fingerprint of climate action, and it's important that, you know, we sort of unpack these models and help make them usable for other communities that are starting their journey. So popular models on a community level are things like the climate emergency model, 100% renewable, totally renewable, electrify postcodes and precincts, and zero net energy or zero net emissions. They're also all covered in the handbook. And that can help communities sort of act strategically and collectively to have a plan, you know, to come up with a local, you know, community energy plan or a net zero plan or whatever their focus area is. I think the overarching guidance is pretty simple. You know, there's concrete individual practical actions across the whole spectrum of home, work, community that can be taken. And they're things like, you know, people can electrify their homes and become energy efficient. They can implement sustainability actions at their workplace. They can find, join or create a local climate action group. And they can advocate for change, you know, whether it's local, state government or federal government. And through that, I guess, the, you know, the premise is that you'll find hope because you are active in making change.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I saw, well, I have read it now, meanwhile, and there's a variety of references to local councils where detailing what those local councils offer, which is a really important thing because too many people don't even know what their local councils are about, apart from, of course, rates and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Some councils are doing really exciting things in this space,
mm-hmm.
and so they should.
That's right. So we're sort of slowly actually moving to the end, which is a little bit premature because we lost a couple of minutes at the beginning of our program. For which I already apologize to all of you. And after those rather serious but really important meanderings about climate action and why we're approaching, and also, as I said, why we just have a couple of minutes more left, your last thoughts in the book are in, I quote you, "In this time we need art." You already said something like about that at the beginning, and tell us a bit more about that, please.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, climate change and communicating climate change or engaging around climate change, it can be quite complicated, and some of the ideas around, you know, temperature change and data and things like that, they can just be pretty complex and, yeah, I guess for a broad spectrum of people. And I think, you know, art and artists play a really pivotal role in, you know, communicating complex ideas in friendly manners, as mm-hmm. well as, you know, creating art that might not be so friendly, but is really engaging in how it interprets, you know, certain situations. historically, we've always had artist residencies out at the wind farm. So every couple of years, we've had amazing sort of kinetic wind sculpture artists and audio and visual artists come and do particular things. But also back in 2013 and then in 2015, we had two large murals painted on each of our turbines. Our turbines are called Gale and Gusto, so they, mm-hmm. They needed their personalities visualised. So mm-hmm. we had two murals, and at that time we were the first, wind turbines to do murals mm-hmm. In the world. We've got a lot of media from it and things like that. And what we see now is it's very common for wind turbines or community batteries or silos to have, these big murals to kind of engage communities and, in the silo experience, it draws a whole new kind of cohort of visitors to very regional areas and really increases local economies and things like that. So, I think we can't underestimate the need and focus and priority for art to play a really central role in, what we're doing when we take action, particularly on a community level. I think it really has to be front and centre, because without it, communities will struggle to reach enough people and struggle to communicate complex ideas.
Mm. I'm particularly also thinking about art and young people, from very small young people to adolescents and all of that. If they could engage in through an arts medium into better understanding what climate change is all about and what they can do about it and all, and particularly also to create community, I think you're really onto something there. And as you also know, Oasis was also onto that for the time where we existed. So if you wouldn't mind sending me the direct link to the book, then I will put it on our program website, so that you probably will get a couple more people wanting it and wanting to download it. Thanks, Darren, for this lovely chat we had. It has been a while, almost like, I don't know, 10 years ago or something like that we saw one another last. And
I'll see you in October.
Yes, that's right, because we have the conference, and that's probably the beginning of our community announcements. For the 16th, 17th and 18th of October, we will be having our community development conference at Borderlands in Footscray, and Taryn will be there to make a presentation live. So she most likely also will bring documentation and her book, so that anyone could come do that conference and have a chat with Taryn, which I certainly am looking forward to. So thanks, Darren, and I will see you soon. I also would like to mention to our audience that we have our Borderlands Community Garden, which meanwhile is about a year old and is really well organized with lots of opportunities for volunteering, for taking care and learning about what it takes to have a garden and to use a garden also for your own sustenance. So thanks for listening meanwhile to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio. If you want to send us any comments about today's program, you can email borders@borderlands.org.au. And remember, our past programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and via the 3CR website on 3cr.org.au. To finish our program, please enjoy Milky Mana by King Stingray. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.